the organizer, to Remus especially, for inviting me. So this is a joint work with Professor Palle Jorgensen. By the way, is the mic working? Okay. And actually, maybe the title is a bit general. Well, we have some general results there, but the main character of my talk will be a very special group called the Baumslag-Solitaire group. So let me tell you what that is. And it appears, it's actually at the center of wavelet theory. So the Baumslag-Solitaire group has this parameter n, which is an integer bigger than 2. And it's a group generated by two, having two generators, U and T, and one relation, UT, U inverse equals T to power n. So you can also think of it as the semi-direct product between the n adic numbers with Z, where the action is by multiplication by n. So it's a pretty innocent looking group, but it turns out it's not that innocent, and the more I read about it in the literature, the more I find it more fascinating. So, for example, there is a paper in Invenciones by Mosher and Farb, where they prove that these groups have some rigidity properties, namely they are quasi-isomorphic in the sense of Gromov, if and only if the ends, so you have two ends, they are powers of the same number. There is another paper by Alain Valette and Florian Martin, where they want to compute the so-called Markov operator associated to this group. So that means you take a faithful representation of the group, and you look at the operator 1/2 u plus t. And you want to compute the spectrum of that operator, that's the Markov operator. And to do it, they needed some generalized version of the Riemann hypothesis. So it seemed pretty weird to me. I mean, when I looked first at this group, I said, well, it must be easy. But turns out it's not. And if you find out that actually what they prove is wrong, you're in business. The generalized Riemann hypothesis is not good. our motivation, as I said, comes from wavelet theory. And what I really like about this group is that it's connected to so many various areas in mathematics. So you have the number theory, then the geometric group theory, then you have our wavelets, and of course some operator algebras, a little bit of probability. I will try to say that in my talk. Lots of harmonic analysis, also fractals. So I will just try to give you some ideas from all these connections. Okay, so if you want a representation of the group on some Hilbert space, of course you will only need these two unitary operators, U and T, satisfying this covariance relation. Yeah? It's a particular form of a covariance relation. And in wavelet theory, the representation that you have there is on L2 of R, where T is translation by 1, and U is a dilation by N. Yeah? So if you think about it, if you first translate by 1 and then dilate by n, so that's ut, you get the same result as when you first dilate by n and then translate by n. Yeah, so that's why you have this relation. And that's the center of a wavelet theory. You're using these two operators and you apply them to vectors to get these wavelets, so you get the orthonormal basis in L2 of R. All right, so here is the definition. If you have a representation of the Baumslag-Solitaire group in some Hilbert space, in particular L2 of R, a wavelet for U and T is a finite set psi 1 psi q in H, such that when you apply translations and dilations, but in a particular order to this psi I, you get an orthonormal basis for H. So the order is, first you apply the translations by integers, then dilations by powers of n. So one thing to note here is that you're not using the entire group, the entire Baumslag solitaire group, because you might have there translations by dyadics, right, if you apply U inverse to U, for example. So you don't use that. You use only a part of this group. And this makes things interesting. So when you're using the entire group, what you get actually is only the left regular representation. And if you require less of this orthonormal basis, so if you require only this Parseval frame property that Professor Jorgensen mentioned, that means so you say that a family of vector is a Parseval frame if the Parseval identity is satisfied for all the vectors in the Hilbert space. Yeah? So if you even if you require that but not the whole group, you get projections from the commutant of the left regular representation. So there is something interesting there too. Anyway, for us, this is the order. First translations, then dilations. And not the other way around. And one of the main questions for us was, what are the representations of the Baumslag solitaire group that admit wavelets? So we know from classical wavelet theory that one of them is L2OFR. And there are plenty of wavelets in there. The ones from Hart, from 1902 or around that, and then the new ones from Dobéchy and all the wavelet theory. But it turns out that there are actually many spaces that possess representations of the Baumslag solitaire group and wavelets, orthogonal wavelets. And they can be quite interesting, like fractal spaces. Okay, now to construct these wavelets, there is a main way, which comes from classical wavelet theory in L2OFR, and this is by multi-resolutions. So let me recall what that is. You have a sequence of subspaces Vn in L2OFR. Actually, you can have it in any Hilbert space where you have a representation of this group. With the following properties. Vn is in Vn plus 1, so it's increasing. It's indexed by integers. You should know that too. The union of all of them has to be dense. And, well, the equal there should not be there. Intersection of Vn should be 0. And you can go from one to the next, or to the previous one, I should say, by applying the dilation operator U. And there is one extra property about this central space or core space V0. So in this V0, you should be able to find a vector phi with a property that when you do all the translations, you get an orthonormal basis for V0. And this is what we call the scaling function. That's the terminology in wavelet theory. Actually, we'll see in a moment why it's called scaling function. For example, the main example, the one that contains actually all the ideas, is the Hart scaling function, yeah, which is the characteristic function of 0, 1. So if you think about it, okay, so what's the multi-resolution here? You have to translate the scaling function by all integers, so you get all characteristic functions of these integer intervals, and that will give you V0. You dilate, so that means you're making characteristic functions of intervals of the form 0, 1 half, 1 half, 1, and so on. And so you get finer and finer refinements, and that will give you the density. The intersection is 0 because you get bigger and bigger intervals, so you don't have anything in there. And the core space is, of course, generated by this. Now, if you have a multi-resolution, then you can get your wavelet simply by looking at what's called a detail space, this W0, which is the orthogonal complement of V1 in of V0 in V1. And it turns out by some easy spectral theory and multiplicity theory that in that space you can find these wavelets. You find psi1 up to psi n minus 1 with the property that when you translate them with all integers, you get an orthonormal basis for this detailed space. And so you get, you cover the W0, and then when you apply U to these vectors, you will cover all the orthogonal complements. So you go up with U or down with U, and you will cover all the detailed spaces for all these orthogonal complements. So in the end, you get an orthonormal basis for the entire space. So that's the multi-resolution technique. You need to find this scaling function and its associated multi-resolution. Okay, so now we need to find the scaling function. And if you look here, you have that phi, the translates of phi form of an orthogonal basis for V0. When you dilate phi, so apply U to phi, you get a vector in the previous one, V negative 1. So in particular, it's also in V0. So that means that the dilation of phi can be written in this orthogonal basis. So it can be written as a sum ak dk of phi. This is called the scaling equation. And the scaling function gets its name out of this. So if you refine it, meaning you apply dilation to it, it's a copy of some of its translations. So that also should remind you of what happens with the fractals. Right, so if you have a fractal, you zoom into it, that means you apply dilation. Then you realize that it's a copy, it's a sum of its copies. Right, so for the Cantor set, for example, you dilate it by 3, you get 2 copies of the Cantor set, one the Cantor set itself, plus 1 moved 2 units apart to the right. In our case, with the scaling equation for the Haar scaling function is, if you dilate the 0-1 interval, you get the 0-2 interval. So that's 0-1 union 1/2. Yeah, so you need the phi and the translation of phi. Okay. this is one of the properties that need to be satisfied by the scaling function. You must have this M0, which is called the low-pass filter, and it contains the coefficients from the scaling equation. And out of that, you will be able to construct the scaling function. One of the properties that should be true for this low-pass filter, this function M0, is the following. So when you sum M0 squared over the roots of Z, Wn equals Z, so the roots of Z, you should get 1. And you will see that this actually has a probabilistic interpretation. This is the property that is required to get an isometry from those Kunz isometries from Bratelli and Jorgas. All right. Okay, so now having this low-pass filter M0 that satisfies the quadrature mirror filter condition, that's the name for this equation, it turns out that you can always construct a multi-resolution and representation of the Baumstark solitaire group with a scaling function that satisfies exactly the scaling equation given by your filter M0. So you have M0 is sum AK ZK, there exists a Hilbert space, UT, representation of the Baumschak solitaire group, and the vector phi with the following property. U phi is some AKTK phi. This is exactly the scaling equation that you're looking for. The translates of phi are orthogonal, and you have the multi-resolution property that when you take translates of phi, you get V0, so then you apply dilations, you get the Vn, the span of it is h. Sometimes the intersection can be non-trivial, but only in very particular cases. Alright, and we call this the wavelet representation associated to M0. Why is this representation good? Well, first of all, you have classical wavelets. So you want to see that what you get in that case, so for those particular filters, like the Haar filter, it coincides with what you already know. So that should be done. That happens. But then there are some other filters in wavelet theory, like the one that Professor Jorgensen told you about, that won't give you an orthogonal scaling function. We'll give you just a Parseval frame. So one question is why this happens? And you will see that this will give you an answer. And there are some examples also that can give you fractal space, you know, spaces. Another good property of this representation is that it's closely related to the spectrum of transfer operators that appear in ergodic theory. So you can find a relation between the fixed points of the transfer operators and the commutant of this relation. But if I have time, I will say something about that. All right. Out of the operator T, of course, by Borel functional calculus, you can construct a representation of continuous functions. And this representation, and we'll satisfy this covariance relation. So U pi F U inverse is pi F composed with R. In the particular case of the Baumschak solitaire group, R of Z is Zn on the unit circle. The scaling equation becomes U phi is pi M0 phi. The orthogonality relation becomes pi F phi, inner product with phi is equal to integral of F d mu. I wanted to mention this because in this form you can extend our theorem to more general endomorphisms. So, for example, you can take rational maps on Julia sets or subshifts of a finite type. The only thing that you need is a nice measure, that a strongly invariant measure. So it's one of those measures that have maximal entropy. And then using the techniques from wavelet theory, you can construct orthonormal bases which are related to L2 spaces on these, Julia sets or subshifts of one finite. Actually, I'm going to leave that one there. All right, so let me give you quickly a few examples. So you have this theorem, what happens when you pick some concrete examples for M0. When M0 satisfies the low-pass condition, that's M0 of 1 equals square root of n, so that at 1 it is as big as it can be. That's one condition which is common in classical wavelet theory on L2 of R. And if you add some extra condition to get the scaling function orthogonal, then the representation will be what you expect from classical wavelet theory, H equals L2 of R with a translation and a classical dilation. Now, the first interesting example is when you dilate by 2, n equals to 2, and you take the filter M0 of Z equals 1 plus Z cubed. So So that's related to this stretched R scaling function. So you think of the scaling equation. It means when you dilate by 2, you should have a copy of the initial function plus a copy of the initial function translated by 3. The solution for that is the characteristic function of 0, 3, normalized in this way because you want the integral to be 1. This scaling function is predicted by classical wavelet theory, but it turns out that it's not orthogonal. Yeah? You translate by 1, you don't get orthogonality. The corresponding wavelet is this one. You take 1/3 on 0, 3 halves, negative 1/3 on 3 halves, 3. But our theorem says that in some space, you can find a scaling function which is orthogonal and satisfies the same scaling equation. And in this case, it turns out that you get these super wavelets, so what you need is a bigger space than L2 of R, where you can fit the scaling function in such a way that you get orthogonal translation. So what you do is put L2 of R, the classical one, and then two more copies. The translation, you have to put the regular translation of the first component, and then you have to multiply also by these cycles on the second components. For U, put the regular dilation on the first component, same thing on the other two components, but you also permute them. The scaling function is just phi, 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 so that's phi on each component. Scale it, wavelet will be psi, 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 and this will give you an orthonormal wavelet for this bigger space, hence the name super wavelet. It's a super space. Actually, it turns out that whenever classical wavelet theory predicts a Parseval frame, you do get a super wavelet, an orthogonal super wavelet in a bigger space like this. A completely different type of example is on fractals. So if you take dilation by 3, so this is perfectly fitted for the Cantor set. So you take dilation by 3, you take m of z to be 1 plus z square. So that means that when you dilate the scaling function by 3, you should get the scaling function plus a copy of it translated by 2. A solution for that, if you think about it, is exactly the Cantor set, right? Dilate by 3, get the Cantor set plus a copy which is moved to integers to the right. And you only have to figure out where this sits, in what Hilbert space. And for that, you have to take a subset of R consisting of those numbers which can be written in base 3 using finitely many ones. You put the Hausdorff measure that corresponds to the Hausdorff dimension on the Cantor set. That's your Hilbert space, L2 of R and this Hausdorff measure. Now you define the translation as a regular one by integer, by 1, and the dilation by 3, but when you renormalize, you have to renormalize by square root of 2 because of the property of the Hausdorff measure. And what's nice, you get wavelets, you get an orthonormal basis for this Hausdorff measure by taking these two wavelets. So you take characteristic function of the third of the Cantor set and one which is moved by 2/3. And you have to put this one, it's like putting the Cantor set in its gap, a copy of the Cantor set in its gap, and then applying the translation operator and the dilation operator, you get an orthonormal basis for this Hausdorff measure. Another interesting application for this is that you can get a candidate for a Fourier transform on this Hausdorff measure. So the way to do it, well, we have a general way to construct these covariant representations. Were supported on the solenoid, and in that case, the translations are just multiplications, and the dilations also have a particularly nice form. And having that, you have the isomorphism between this structure and the one on the solenoid. And this, the isomorphism will transform the translations into multiplications, triadic translations into multiplications, and the dilation by 3 into, it's not quite dilation, but, well, it's inverse, so that means contraction by 3, but close to that. So you get a Fourier, a candidate for a Fourier transform on the Cantor set. How many minutes do I have? Okay, so maybe I will just finalize my talk with this theorem, which relates our covariant representations or our representations of the bound fluxoid-R group with the transfer operator. So if you have your low-pass filter, your function M0, you can define the transfer operator in this way. So you, again, you take the sum over the roots of Z. And the weight is given by M0 squared, well, over N. Here, well, Z is in a unit circle. So this is a, you know, the transfer operator or Joel operator is used many times in ergodic theory, also in wavelet theory. And its spectrum is important for figuring out how much mixing there is in a in a dynamical system, or to figure out the equilibrium states. And for us, we have this relation between fixed points of the transfer operator, which are also called harmonic functions, and the commutant of this covariant representation. So there is a one-to-one correspondence between harmonic functions for a transfer operator. That means functions in L infinity with the property that RM0H is equal to H, so fixed by the transfer operator. And operators S that commute with the unitary operators U and T, so operators in the commutant. The correspondence is given by so the inner product TKS phi being the scaling function, inner product with phi is equal to HZK integral over T. So the Fourier coefficients of H are given by these inner products between translates of S phi and phi. And this can be used to solve some spectral problems for the transfer operator. So you construct your covariance representation. Hopefully that has a concrete form. This happens for super wavelets or for the fractal case and some other cases too. And you can get the commutant easily. Actually, it's an abelian algebra. So that's another property that you can get. Harmonic functions also form a sister algebra with respect to multiplication coming from the commutant. Okay, I'm going to stop here. Thank you very much.